This podcast is a 98 Studios production.
Hey, it's Christy. Welcome back to Do the Work. Today and every day, we will talk about things that really matter. You, your thoughts, your feelings, and your experiences. Relationships are what matter most, and they can be complicated. If you'd like a better connection with yourself, with others, and with God, you are in the right place. So glad you're here. Welcome back to Do the Work. I am so grateful to have you here and really excited to talk about this topic. Not because this is a joyful space in our life by any stretch of the imagination, but I just think it's such an important topic. And one of the chapters out of Edith Eger's The Gift, which we're going through these last several weeks. So welcome back to Do the Work. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. I hope first and foremost, as you listen, you'll think how to apply these principles to your own life. But then I really hope you'll also think to share it with others as you listen. My guest today is a very wise man and a good friend of mine. And can we just say that you're married to Jem?
Yeah.
Mark.
Okay. I'm married to my favorite person.
That's a good
She might
answer.
Be a lot of people's favorite person, yeah, too, so that's good.
I think she is. So I'm here with Mark Yagi today. And Mark grew up a practicing member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He served a two-year LDS mission in the southern United States, and at the beginning of his mission chose to turn his life over to Christ. Since that time, he spent much of his adult lifetime studying current Christian religious thinking and practices. In the last 10 years, he's focused more on current religious practice and its effect on human change. He's currently pursuing a master's in religion from Harvard with a focus on world comparative religion and human change and relationships. So cool.
It's fun, huh?
So cool.
That's too broad. I'm still narrowing it down.
Do you have to narrow it down?
No, not necessarily, but yeah. It's too much to bite off at this point. Yeah.
And you're attending Harvard from Alpine.
Yes, I do need to go there for an extended period of time to complete the program, but
really?
We'll figure that out when it comes. Yeah.
Don't you dare take Elizabeth with you. I'm kidding. You can. She's yours. Okay. In his day job, he works as an executive for a consumer products business in the health and wellness space. In his career, he's acquired and divested of 85 businesses, allowing him to work closely in opposing and sensitive negotiations with hundreds of people. What a great skill.
Yeah. Well, developed.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great skill early on, just a lot of learning.
Yeah, that's great. He is married for 28 years to Elizabeth Yagi, and they have 6 children ranging from age 26 to 8, which is a big gap.
Yeah, that's the biggest learning place, really, as a human, learning how to relate to children and in a close relationship, close romantic relationship, mm-hmm. and otherwise, you know.
Mm, so true. He enjoys activities with his family, sports, and learning. And I will say, you didn't put this on here, but you have, outside of work, outside of your family, helped so many people in so many different ways. And that's something that probably won't go on your tombstone or doesn't go on your resume, but you've helped a lot of people.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. I do what I can.
Yeah.
With what I know.
Yeah. You're great. Okay. I've invited Mark today because Mark and I've had lots of different conversations about resentments. And I really appreciate your thoughts about how resentments affect us, what they are, why we have them. You have lots of insights around it. So today I want to talk about resentment because, again, in the book, Edith Eger talks about it as a mental prison, that when we have resentments, we are stuck. If we don't know how to let go of resentments, we're stuck. And so often, as a coach, I will see individuals in so much pain. And honestly, in my personal life and in the lives of people I love, resentments have been so distracting, so hurtful, for so many reasons. So I'm really happy to talk about it today and hopefully be able to help someone work through their own resentment or even recognize a resentment. Because so often someone that's on the other side of a resentment is just, how can I be better? What could I do? How can I change to make this other person, I'm not making them happy. So it must be me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great point.
Yeah. So Mark, what is a resentment? What does it look like, sound like, feel like?
So maybe the best place to go is the origin of resentment.
Okay.
It comes from normally, I mean, my best words, and hopefully I do it justice, but two types of things that occur in our life. One, a person does something maybe to us, against us, says something that we don't like.
Yeah.
Or we're forced to accept something, or we feel forced to accept something that we don't like, that we didn't want.
Yes.
It's not ours. I didn't want it. And now I'm forced to accept this thing.
Yes.
Or I've had to deal with something that somebody has, you know, placed upon me. Could be abuse. It could be anything, really, mm-hmm. you know. My first memory of resentment was a young lady when I was a child. We were all playing with dolls. I think I've told you this one before. We're all playing with dolls, and I wanted to play with the boy doll. And I just kept, I think I was repeating myself a little bit. And she turned around and said, "What's wrong with you, Mark?" And I just was so hurt. And I think the concept of what's wrong with me was kind of deep inside me already. Yeah. And that hurt. And I walked away crying and mad. And I held that. I didn't process it. I didn't know how. And so when somebody does that, and I don't know how to own my own power, I now feel powerless in it and hurt. And that's where it starts, right? And then it's fostered because a person, there's a lot of thinking. There's actually a psychiatrist, Seth Meyers, oddly, was the name.
Yeah.
A psychiatrist. He says that it's the consequence of notable invalidation, right? Or, and he even kind of used the term, one too many invalidations in a person's life. And so if they're invalidated and that invalidation is absorbed inside, we all tend to resent as a result of that. And whether or not it's long-term or short-term, we all kind of visit that space.
Yeah. So it's a human experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody experiences this. And it's some people will say it's a secondary feeling. I think it's a nuance. It's a feeling, and it's something that you're going to experience. All humans are going to experience in their lives. It's whether or not we let it take hold and start owning and running much of our operation, and much of our behavior and what we do.
Yes. So that's interesting when you say some people will say it's a secondary. You mean it's like a cover emotion?
Yeah. Right. It's the hurt is the first emotion. I felt hurt.
Right.
And then, because it feels powerful, it's an illusion of power, an illusion that if I am angry, that feels powerful. It feels stronger. If I feel hurt, that feels weak.
Yeah.
So we go to anger first, and that's this sort of the secondary emotion. Good. Yeah.
Okay. So you wanted to play with the guy doll, the boy doll.
Yeah.
And then what happened? She said, "What's wrong with you?"
She said, "What's wrong with you, Mark?" And I remember walking away and not returning back. And now I've got a second hurt because all the kids are circled around this big dollhouse and with all these dolls, and I'm alone.
Yeah.
Now I feel lonely. Yeah. And I think she did it to me.
Yeah.
Right. And so now I've become this victim of the situation. It's the same with every one of our situations. I'd say that the other definition of resentment is it's this victim persecutor all at once. So now I'm a victim of what she did. I have no tools to deal with this, but I'm like, I can't believe she did this. You hear the persecutor. Now I'm a persecutor as well. I can't believe you did this. And you're rotten, and I'm so hurt, and you're rotten, right? And so now I'm resentful. That would be a good definition of resentment, is the combo, kind of aggressive combo of this victim persecution position that I take in my head. And normally, you asked, how do you see it? Did you ask that already?
How do you see it, feel it?
So one way to know that you're in a resentment, see, in a close relationship, it's very tricky. Right. In a little more distance relationship, it's a little easier to see because I don't see them the next day, maybe.
Right.
And I can remember and go, yeah, that was kind of rotten of me to think that way. But in a close relationship, you're close to the person, potentially physically intimate with the person, and that can mix up those feelings. How I find it and how I see other people tend to find it is through stories they tell in their head.
Mm-hmm.
So as an example, my wife, you know, I was feeling a bit hurt about something. my wife didn't ask me any questions about it and turned and walked away and did something else.
Yeah.
And in my head, I can tell a couple of stories.
Yeah.
Right. And the resentful story is she's not very affectionate. She's not very nice. You see it pointed at her. That's how I know I'm in a resentment at that time,
yeah.
At least for me. And I see that in tons and tons of people. And it becomes so destructive in a relationship because once I've told that story, then all I have to do is believe that story. And then I want to convince myself and her of that story, right? To make it feel better. And all the while I'm trying to hold power in a relationship and it's just an illusion of power. There's mm-hmm. never a power. It just creates destruction.
Mm-hmm. Right? That is such a good example. So if you didn't move into a resentment, what would that look like? What would have been...
Oh, what was the healthy response?
What would have been the sliding door? Brené Brown tells a story of this movie called Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow in the 90s, where it's this show where she gets onto this train, but the movie splits into two and says, okay, here's the story when of her getting on the plane, and here's the story of her not getting on the train. It's a train, I think. What would it look like if someone chose not to move into resentment?
Yeah.
What's that sliding door?
First, I love that you said it's a choice and that the choice is what's in my head. I get to choose how I think about the situation. Mm. My feelings will heavily inform my choices often, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I would say it's acknowledging that there's many stories that could be told about this and that my story isn't right because I feel it,
yeah.
Right? I acknowledge that. So what I want to say is, well, there's this healthy response, but that doesn't really get at the heart of resentment. If I just know the right response, I'll respond well, but the resentment's still in my heart. And so I may show up a good response and everybody will say, well, such a nice person and everything. And all the while I'm just hurting inside and I am resentful and not just hurting. I'm hateful.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, and so, the right response is to consider the many different options and then to ask the person, right? And to talk about it. If it's a relationship, a close relationship you want to keep.
Yes.
If it's not a close relationship you want to keep, I suppose you don't have to ask. But and people go, oh, shoot, that means I have to talk to my spouse an awful lot more than I do.
Which
about
is
my
interesting,
feelings.
Right? This person that I'm resenting who doesn't love me more or it doesn't treat me better, I feel fear about talking to them.
Yeah, more. Yeah, about that specific thing. So that event, I would consider that there's many possibilities. Might be that she's hurting right now.
Mm-hmm.
Might be that she just had something else on her mind.
Right.
It could be that simple. But my story was, she's not very affectionate to me. She's not very nice and she must not like me very much. And that puts it out of my control. Now, what can I control? Mm-hmm. I can be mad about that. I can seethe about it. I can withdraw my affections, which I've been guilty of hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And so rather asking the question, and this is not practiced by many people, so it does require practice going back to her and saying, hey, when you did that, I felt hurt. And that's opening yourself up to all sorts of vulnerability, right? But that's where the real power is. It's in the humility and the vulnerability. It's not in the illusion that I can hold power by withdrawing from my spouse or from my close person.
Yeah. And we do, as you're describing that we're saying it, we're talking about it like it's a conscious thing. It's so often not conscious.
Yeah,
we just
agreed.
See it as the truth. We just see it
yes.
as, oh, she doesn't care. And you know what? I'm tired of her not caring.
Yeah, I had discussions with a couple of different friends recently on that exact topic where they'd say, well, she did this and she did that and she said this. And I said, were those her words? Were those what she said? Did she say, you're a child or you're a, call you a name? No, I mean, not exactly that, but that's what she meant. It's like, no, you have just told a long story and this is why you're in this position, why you're struggling in your relationship, because you're telling a story about the other person you didn't ask.
Yes.
Right. And yeah, when the real story hurts anyway, we don't want to ask. We don't want to be involved in that. We'd rather just things be happy. And that's the real issue. It's the nice guy syndrome, right? The nice guy wants everything to be happy and doesn't want to deal with those harder things in order to ensure the path of happiness.
Yeah. And I would say the nice guy wants everything to be happy, but really what they want is to be loved and seen.
And validated.
And validated.
Exactly. It's that you go back to the original, that original invalidation. You know, my personal experience, the reason I understand these things is only because I've struggled so deeply with them, right? And so when I learned that my experience felt so invalidated, that I needed so much more, and I didn't have any tools to circle back to the other person. I just wanted them to make me feel better, right? And that was, again, like you said, it's really quite unconscious. And especially in the close relationship, it gets more unconscious. You have to almost separate from them for a minute to go, hold on, let me get back and think about this. Put some new framing around it, some new possibilities, and then go ask the other person and get connected around it. But more importantly, I need to go get some support myself, where people will validate me and tell me I'm not crazy and that sort of thing. And that will bring that to mind and it'll make it not unconscious. Mm-hmm. In the Buddhist view, it's mindfulness, right? Mindful is not one answer, but it's like, it's thoughtful about what you're thinking. It's knowing what I'm thinking when I'm not normally conscious of what I'm thinking.
Yes. Yes. You know, as you were describing that, I thought, when you said, go get, like, you need validation, you need to be seen in it. But sometimes we are so good at the stories, at being, you know, hiding our resentment in our language that we could tell people, like, oh, here's the story.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's my thing, like, do the work. So on either side, on either side of this, we get married because we love someone deeply. Mm-hmm. We love the closeness. We love the intimacy, the physical and emotional and spiritual intimacy so often that accompanies like that courting experience. And then something happens in our relationships where we go, where it's like almost the other person becomes the enemy. And I believe so often it is these resentments. Do you think
solely those resentments, honestly?
Yes.
I mean, that's simplifying things, certainly, but I think you can simplify it that far into a place where I have this great love for this person that's inside. I'm not practiced at true, real love, real compassionate, validating, giving love. I'm practiced at getting something.
Yes.
Right. Getting
the
comfort
and
the feel. Yeah. And so without that practice, I'm going to misuse this closeness, this intimacy. And everybody needs that to have a long lasting, meaningful, intimate relationship with a close person requires the giving up of our resentments and the practicing of giving up our resentments and the practicing. On the opposite side, I think you might ask, well, what's the solution here, right? The simple version of that, I think, is compassion. I think it's the giving of oneself over to a real love and care for the other person. And the care that says, my job is to help alleviate my own suffering and then to help alleviate the other person's suffering. And anything I do that causes suffering is a violation of that. Anything, regardless of whether they did something that causes my suffering. Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so if I'm connecting that then to resentment.
Yeah. Resentment causes suffering. It's the first thing. It's everything in my head says, so using my example with me and my wife, I would say in my head, she is not being very affectionate. I don't like that. And she's clearly doesn't like me very much the way she looked at me that way, you know, and she'd left the cupboard open when I always said I wish she'd always close the cupboards. And I can't believe she would do that. See, all this is just pointing to that she doesn't really like me. She doesn't care.
Yeah.
And that's just a horrible thought. So unconsciously or consciously, whatever it is, I'm going to show up as if I do care, but I'm not actually going to give very much into the relationship now. Mm-hmm. Right. That causes suffering. That's an exact violation of real love. It's exactly the opposite. And we all do it to some degree, right?
No doubt.
And so I think why is compassion the opposite? Is because you can't do both.
Oh, I love that. So with compassion, resentment cannot live inside of compassion. Are you saying that?
Yes, it can't. Not at the same time, but, yeah. You know, a person can show compassion and be compassionate at one moment and be resentful the next. I believe that.
Yeah. But it's when you're feeling, when you are compassionate, you're not.
No.
You cannot keep the resentment. Mm-mm. Yeah.
No, exactly. It's actually, one researcher said that it's actually very fast to eliminate your resentments.
Compassion is?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. If that's what you're cultivating in your life and that's what your focus is. Now it doesn't mean it won't always be a challenge. I mean, for me, maybe I wasn't raised in resentment, but I learned it well mm-hmm. over so many years that it's a pattern in my mind. It's kind of my first go-to mm-hmm. take power, you know, mm-hmm. control things. Mm-hmm. And that's a way that I would do that. And so I'm always aware of that. And I say always, that's a strong word, but so the story comes and I'm like, whoa, that's not the story. Hold up, back at the bus,
yeah.
Get to a real story, ask some questions. To me, that's a lifelong practice.
Oh, Mark, I like that so much because you said, I gain power by being in resentment, like mm-hmm. by holding a resentment. Give us a little bit
illusion
more.
Illusion of power.
Right. Right. It is a total illusion of power.
Yeah.
But what, give us some examples of what that looks like. Like, why do I have the illusion of power if I'm resentful?
Well, I think it comes back to the beginning point where somebody feels hurt and it's out of my control or I'm being forced. I think I'm forced to take on something that I don't want. Mm-hmm. And so this is my way of taking back that power. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, hey, I don't want that. That's not me. You know, the way you treated me was not okay. That feels hurtful. And I'm going to, you know, process this and consider how I'm going to choose to respond in this. Rather, I'm saying, nope, I'm reacting to that power take or the feeling of the power take to grab power. And the fastest way to get power is to be angry. You know, to me, that emotion feels so much better for me. And I think different people have learned different tools. I mean, I know some people who didn't really learn resentment in their growing up years, and they're pretty good at managing that. But everybody's experienced it nonetheless.
Yeah, for sure. When you said power is, you know, we get power from resentment. I would also say by going into resentment, we don't have to feel, and mm-hmm. we don't have to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like this, like,
well, that's a good protector. Point. That's probably more what you're getting at, right? Is like the vulnerability, that anger stops my vulnerability. What I'm really saying is I'm hurt. I'm no longer going to be vulnerable to that pain.
Yep.
I don't want the pain. It's the age old avoid pain, find pleasure story. Yes. And it's so fast and so easy with anger, especially if you've learned it over years, then yeah. And it kills the vulnerability in a relationship, and vulnerability is the lifeblood of a relationship. So I'm killing the lifeblood of my relationship, chokes it all out, creates just pain and suffering in the relationship, and eventually will end it if I don't deal with it. You know, the Gottman Institute did great studies on marriage relationships in particular, and they came up with these four horsemen, the damaging ways to, you know, things that people do to damage their relationships. And the chief among those is what they called the word contempt. And to me, that's resentment. It's saying contemptuous things. And then afterwards, sometimes we're like, oh, I didn't mean that. I'm so sorry. Why did that come out then? Because there's a resentment there that I have, you know, undealt with, and I'm dealing with it by verbalizing it out there. And that contempt that you could, their studies say that people can fight. They could be angry with each other. They can do all sorts of, not that that's healthy, but just that's a part of it.
But it might be working through. Yeah.
Yeah. I think of all the times when if I'm upset with my wife and I don't hold contempt, I'm very quick to move past that. Mm-hmm. And she too. But man, if I'm upset and I hold the contempt, it's like days, weeks. It's so mm-hmm. painful mm-hmm. and so horrible, because that upset is no longer has a place for open resolution, a vulnerable, soft place to land. She no longer has a soft place to land, not in me.
Yeah.
So where is she going to go to get a soft place to land? Not me. Not when I'm in my resentment.
Yeah.
She may try.
Yeah.
What did I do wrong, like you said before?
Yeah.
Yeah. She won't find it.
That's really good. And as you said that, I thought, you said it's the lifeblood of relationship. Vulnerability is the lifeblood of relationships. And there's none of that in resentment.
No.
And I thought, you know, irreconcilable differences is often the reason for divorce.
Oh, great point. Yeah.
We really could just say resentment.
Yeah. Like,
what's the reason for divorce? Resentment.
Because I had a difference about irreconcilable differences. You can, people who've been through this or probably have things rolling through their heads right now, right? Like, oh, here's a story. The irreconcilable difference is the story that I think that she's not being very affectionate.
Yeah.
And I have told that story and I've believed that story.
I just keep gathering
data and evidence to that point because I need it to be true because otherwise I have to be vulnerable. So I can hold this resentment. I can tell the story. And that's a big difference in a relationship. If you're not very affectionate or affectionate towards me, that's pretty tough on a relationship, isn't it? That's really tough. But if what's even tougher is when I am telling a deluded story that you're not affectionate, and then I'm ensuring to prove that out by virtue of my resentment and my withdrawing of my own vulnerability. And thus you're not going to be very affectionate to a closed off, angry, frustrated, quiet, whatever person.
It's like, why aren't you more affectionate with me? Well, that's...
Boy, I touch you and you prickle.
Yeah. It's so nuanced for sure. Mm-hmm. But I just go back to that. When someone chooses to get married, they want that relationship so much.
I think everybody does. I don't, maybe not everybody, but it sure... Yeah. To me, that's the innate goodness of the human is shown in that desire.
Yes.
And that wish for closeness. And that's just an innate goodness in every human that they have.
Yes.
And then the thing that we have to, you know, cultivate is the positive innate goodness. But if we're cultivating something else, it's the, you know, the old story of the two wolves, I feed the wrong one.
Yes.
It's a bad situation. But I can cultivate that in a relationship. I can remember that first story. When I've had troubles in my own mind with my wife, I'll go back to that original story and multiple original stories that were positive.
Right.
And I'll go, well, then what changed that? And the first thing in my mind is, well, she did this or she did that.
Yeah, we're always like.
And I know, through this kind of practice, through just a mindful thinking practice, a heartfelt, you know, understanding of what compassion really is, that's me. It's not her. Hmm. She's got her own. No doubt. The other person always has their own. Exactly. But I can't control them. I can't control whether they actually have compassion on me. And here's the truth. If I don't deliver real love, I'll never see it coming at me. So it was shocking when I made big, meaningful changes in my care for my spouse. How amazingly connected all of a sudden she was.
I knew she had it in her.
I'm so glad she made all these changes. Exactly. I've made so many changes. No, she was always that way.
Yeah.
And I had just never accessed it.
Yes.
And that was so sad. I mean, nobody even wants to grieve that. I think our spirits know that there's something painful on the other end of this, but something beautiful too. And you're going to have to go through the pain to get to that beauty.
That's so...
The pain of being absolutely wrong.
And just accepting the beauty of saying, what part is mine? Yeah. Like, what part is mine? Because I want to address it. Mm-hmm. I want to look at it. I want to change it. I want to be closer to you. Help me see what's hurting. And our ego is like standing right next to that desire, mm-hmm. saying, are we sure we want to hear? Are you, I mean, shouldn't he or she be taking more responsibility for that? You know, it's just this constant protector. And yet for real connection, it's just required. What part is mine? Doesn't mean I have all the part. It just means what part is mine?
Yeah. Beautiful. There's a book by Thich Hanh, who's a Buddhist monk from mm-hmm. Vietnam. He's very well known in the West. I think he recently passed away. It's called True Love. Mm. And it's very small, so anybody can read it. Very simple. And it's translated. And so it's even more simple. It's almost in like baby English is what it all. But some of the practices are literally saying to yourself, I am suffering. Will you help me? Right? And just say, you can say that in any way you want. I see that you must be suffering. I'm here for you. Simple, beautiful, right? I see that you, if my wife is doing something that looks like not love, there are really only a few answers. Either I'm just not aware of really what's going on with her at the time and I can ask, or she might be really suffering. And if I can ask, I see that you might be suffering. I'm suffering too. Now we've got a connection point, right? But besides that, there's not a lot of connection, right? And we can say that in multiple ways, right? Think of all the different languages and words we can say. But that's a really powerful, simple tool.
I like that so much. Taking things personally is the key to resentments. Wanda resentment, take everything personally. Yes or no, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what we've been talking about, right?
No doubt about it. I'm going to retell a story in 2 seconds about Jesus. Okay. He tells the parable of the Jew who falls among thieves. And then there's these people who walk past him and don't help to relieve his suffering, right? And then there's the Samaritan who does. But what we don't know is all that happened in between.
Right.
It's possible that this person was hurting so bad and so afraid that he fought that Samaritan the entire way.
That's
is that
a
possible?
Good point. It's absolutely possible.
I'm not saying he did.
Right.
I'm saying it's possible.
Right.
And so, but yet, and he might have been screaming obscenities to the people across the road. I'm going to walk past. I'm not going to go help that guy.
Right.
It's possible.
Such a good point. Yes.
Right? And so if you think about that.
Yeah, my picture is like he's just laying on the side of the road and no one helped him.
And people just walk by. I don't know that that's true or not,
really,
right? We don't know the rest of the story. And so that's what we're afraid of, right? When somebody is struggling, I want to tell a story that is that makes them out to be their own victim and that makes them out to... that keeps me from having to engage vulnerably with them, especially because it might come back at me. And it might, that's the nature of not having resentment. That's the nature of having compassion instead of resentment, I think. Right. And it's like, I'm going to give even though they're fighting, even though they may actually say they don't want it. I'm still going to give to whatever degree is allowable.
Yeah. Yeah. That just requires emotional maturity.
Yeah, it does. Well, and it requires me to be validated myself, to know where my base comes from, and to have enough self and peace to be able to engage when somebody's writhing in their own pain and prickly and angry. And that doesn't have to be by the side of the road. It can be literally just in their bedroom or avoidant in the other room or a cold feeling in the house. Right. And it's that is the suffering on the side of the road. And if I consider that, I think I'll reach out.
We are good in our hearts. We love, we want to connect with people, but we get stuck in our pain, really is what it is. People don't like to admit they're stuck in pain. They don't even know they're stuck in pain.
Yeah,
but resentments are evidence of that, right?
And here we are talking about this, and I don't want to make it out. I understand the principles. But I still get stuck in pain. It was just a few days ago, I went back to my wife one day and said, I have all sorts of problems. I am really struggling with this. But I think it's that has changed for me, right? It's that I will go and say, I have some problems here to deal with. I have a heart problem that I'm not being vulnerable right now, and I can tell. And I can see that it's causing pain, and I don't want that.
Yes.
Right. And that's a massive difference for me. And I think it is for most people.
Yes.
And recognizing that I am good at the very soul and that all people are good at the very soul means I can just build on that instead of trying to solve the problem all the time.
Yeah.
I don't need to solve the problem. I need to build on something good.
Yes. Well, and I love your example of the Good Samaritan. Like, I completely had a visual of what that's looked like, and you gave me a different visual. And really, the way I respond to someone actually has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with me.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's the message there, right? That the person on the side of the road is in my home right now.
Yeah.
And they always are. And their behavior, if it's negative or ugly even, or whatever it is, it's that all those negative and ugly behaviors stemming from pain, from their suffering.
Yes.
So am I going to bite back at their suffering because I'm hurting too? Mm. Or am I going to relieve my own suffering first and the suffering of others? Or do my best? Do you find tools and practice that relieving of suffering? Yeah.
Yes. You mentioned like a Christian thought of how to work through resentments. You said something to, or you've shared with me the Buddhist. Tell me.
Yeah. So
they're similar.
They are. They're very similar. In fact, Thich Nhat he acknowledges that the centrality of compassion or centrality of the gospel of Jesus Christ or Christianity is compassion. That is the very central of Christianity. He's giving a great acknowledgement to that.
Jesus Christ said that too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and I mean, the statement that says, look, you can have all sorts of power and capability and faith. This is Jesus speaking, right? You can have the faith to move mountains. I always thought that that was just a figure of speech.
Yeah.
No, that's true. You can have all sorts of capabilities to heal, spiritual capabilities, but if I don't have what he called charity, I don't have anything. It's a sounding of tinkling cymbals, right? It's just all that is nothing.
Yes.
And then in the Buddhist thought, there's these four, they call them four immeasurables, that's at the heart and core of Buddhism. And all four of them revolve around compassion. And so to me, it's not as complex of getting out of resentment as we might think. It's really a focus in our lives that's very different than the focus of self-preservation or of feeling hurt and all of that. It's a focus on that goodness inside of ourselves. So those four immeasurables start with loving kindness, they call it. That's probably a translated term, but loving kindness is I'll give kindness regardless of any outcome. Okay, that sounds pretty close. The second one is actually compassion, which they define, and I think is normally defined as the heartfelt desire to relieve suffering of people.
Mm.
The third one is interesting, and this for me speaks directly to resentment or the opposite of resentment, and that is what's called appreciative joy. And that is the idea that somebody else has joy, I'm joyful too.
Aww.
For them. I'm just joyful. And I will tell you, having lived much of my life in deep resentment, that doesn't exist with an attitude of resentment.
No.
I can't, somebody moves in and they've had something good happen to them, and I'm just comparing. I'm just so frustrated. Yeah. Pride of resentment, right?
I don't want someone to be enmity. Better than me.
Yeah. Or have something better happier. Than me. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's the joy and appreciativeness of people when they're happy for something. And it doesn't matter that maybe suffering is coming down the road.
Yeah.
Nope. They're happy now. Yeah. I'm with them now. Here I am. And then the last one is called equanimity, which is the idea that everything in our feelings and thoughts and experience is all temporary. Mm-hmm. And so my feeling and that thought is temporary. Don't make it permanent, right? And then the ups and the downs of life are not so ups and downs. I can feel them, appreciate them, go through them, and still be like, yeah, it's okay. You know, that's the concept of equanimity. A lot of people are like, no, I just want to go to equanimity. No, you gotta go through all these other things too. So that's Buddhism.
Really insightful.
But I think one of the key points or questions is, how do you get out of it then? How do you notice it? We've talked about that, right?
Yeah, because I want to say, I have heard it said that having resentment is like drinking poison and wanting the other person to die. Or you're literally letting someone live rent-free in your head.
Yeah, that's
so good. How do we get out of it? How do we get out of this space?
Yeah, I mean, one psychologist said you really need to get help. Like, everybody needs help. So it sounds, get help means go get a psychologist. No, it doesn't always mean that. It just means have people to see your resentment who are going to be honest with you about it.
Yes.
right? And so that might mean joining a support group in many cases, right? It probably does for most people who live in that space more consistently, but it definitely means support. And so that I can learn to see it. There's in the world of religions, there's this world of recovery as well. And there's these 12 steps in the world of recovery. Well, one of the central steps is what is step 4, and it's all about your resentments. Well, that's processing the resentments. That step will help a person learn how to process it.
Yeah.
But it has the components you talked about. It's like, acknowledge what happened in my life. Acknowledge those feelings, acknowledge the events, and then also, and write it, like go through it again, because if I'm holding resentments, so the issue is also with a lot of people, resentments, I'm not holding a resentment today.
Right.
I just didn't process it when I was 8.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, do I really got to do that?
Yes.
Do I need to deal with my 8-year-old resentment?
Yeah.
And the answer is yeah, because if you didn't process it, it's still inside you, mulling around. Yeah. And the next time somebody says, what's wrong with you? For me, I'm going to want to, be angry towards them, be resentful. I'm going to probably trigger right to resentment.
You will.
And so it's recognizing it, passing through that, and then recognizing what's mine and what's not mine and owning what's mine.
Yeah.
Owning that my attitude was mine. The fact that I walked away from that and I didn't address it. Oh, I get it. I also can't own that I didn't have those tools at the time.
Yes.
But I'm an adult now. I have the tool. I can develop the tools at least if I'm thoughtful about it and work at it. And so those are the, kind of the core tools. But what's interesting is in Buddhism, in Christianity, in recovery steps, in just about every religion, if you're talking about change, particularly from any kind of resentment, behaviors that usually we're like, I want to get out of that behavior. No, you want to get out of the attitude and the focus of your life, shifting the focus of your life into something that is about love and compassion. Really, in my world, that's Jesus. Yeah. Okay. That's Jesus. But you can call it whatever you want if it's love, compassion, goodness, Jesus. Well, the way to that is the steps they teach you to step 10, 11, and 12 is all about service.
Yeah. In the 12 steps of recovery.
Yeah, the 12 steps of recovery. It's about service. In Buddhism, it's this loving kindness. It's like a giving. It's always giving. It's an outward give. In Jesus' statement, you're going to go to the person who's on the side of the road, even at all of your inconvenience. And in all cases, your motive is the master. Meaning if any part of my motive is still going, when I do this, they're going to be nicer to me and then I'll feel good. Or when I do this,
she or he will for sure say, I'm sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. If it has any string of that, it won't be healing for me. And so I have to pull that motive out and go, no, I'm just going to give into this world now.
My motive is to let go and to give.
Yes, exactly. And that, so I don't have to have let go of every resentment and forgiven everybody to do that.
Right.
But if I know I hate using formulas, but there is this formula, right? Yeah. In a way. Right. And it's like, and the formula includes my motive. In the Buddhist thought, it's like, it has to be out of your heart, right? It literally is, you have to have a heartfelt desire. Well, how do I measure that? Well, do I measure it because I did more service? Nope. It's a heartfelt desire. It's all inside of me. And so if I really desire to be out of resentment, I actually need to shift the focus of my life into heartfelt desire for the goodness of myself and others.
Mm. So good. Good in the Christian faith. It's a contrite heart, a broken heart, and a contrite spirit.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Great words. Exactly.
Yes.
And it's that charity, which is the love of Jesus Christ, that is the pure love that has no motive for a return. And that is everything. And in every scriptural reference about love or Jesus, it always says that's paramount. All the rest comes from that, right? So you can have every other attribute in your life and feel pretty good about it. But if you don't have this charity, this compassion, you don't really have Jesus. You don't really have anything.
And I'm going to say you won't have peace. You won't have hope. Like, if you don't have compassion, if you don't have charity, then, oh, we miss out. As you were talking, this is old, but there is all kinds of ways to make ourselves feel better and to not recognize resentments. You can be the greatest mom on the planet, and if you resent your spouse, good for you, you're a good mom, but you don't have charity.
Yes, right.
You can run businesses. You can, you know, write books.
Be the most capable person on the planet.
On the planet. Yeah. You can be the leader of your congregation. Good for you.
Yeah.
You're the leader. You're the champ. But if you don't have charity alongside that, and inside of resentment, it's impossible to have charity. You can't have it inside of resentment.
Yeah.
So, okay, thank you for sharing that. Matthias Barker, another psychologist, said conflict deterred is a resentment incurred. So you've just given us some steps to get out, but just know that if you just avoid conflict, we wear that kind of as a badge. Like, I'm just conflict avoidant, but you're also likely resentment prone.
Conflict, not likely. People mistake conflict for contention is the word, right? Conflict and contention are not the same thing.
No.
And so having a conflict with compassion is wonderful.
Yeah.
Or having a conflict even because compassion can be wonderful too.
Yeah.
If it turns to, anger and aggression, that's not love. There's no love in it. And that takes some real skill, I think. It takes pure practice.
That's great. Just
going to have to lean into it, mess it up a few times, a few hundred times maybe.
You know, often when people say we don't really know, we don't really know how to do this, or that really isn't true. I mean, we might not know how to do it, but what we really are probably trying to say is we don't know how to secure an outcome. We don't know.
Yeah, good point.
We don't know how to just say, you know what? I'm going to start walking towards this. I'm going to learn how to work through resentment. I'm going to say, let me try again. I'm going to call a friend. I'm going to call a therapist or a coach or a religious leader. I'm going to say, I have something in me that I don't want anymore. Mm-hmm. And Mark,
lovely.
I just believe it's in if we're willing to just say, hey, I'm ready to walk towards that. I believe in my Christian faith that the Savior will come right next to us and say, lean in. Like, I got you. You can figure this out. I'm right here.
I agree. I think it's way faster than we think because of the grace of God.
I agree.
There's not a punishment there. In fact, the concept that he stands at the door and knocks, I think it, and he's always walking there by us. And I just reject as long as I'm going to reject, but he's got all that beauty and compassion there waiting for us.
Never mind.
It just takes me making a decision, and a powerful decision at that, with a lot of choices that go with it and work and effort, but recognition that I am good in the first place. And so that work shouldn't be so threatening because I already am good, right? And that's hard to believe for most of us, right? But maybe I can start with my head and go, okay, people have told me this. Now, how would I act if I am good? How would I show up? And how would I think, more importantly? Because once I think, I'll act on those thoughts.
Thoughts create our feelings and our behavior. It's good. Okay, Mark, where did you get your undergraduate?
University of Utah in finance.
Okay.
And then I got my MBA at Duke. And then I'm working on this master's in religion, which people say, what are you going to do with it when you're done? I don't know.
Live it. I'm going to live it.
Experience it. It's all for experience. And yeah, maybe when I retire from finance, I'll do something with that. But
my thought, as you've been sharing emotional tools and emotional insights and just honest, real life stuff. And yet we live in a world that really honors U of U and finance and Duke and Harvard.
Right, yeah.
And I just want to invite anyone who will listen to this, that this person who is highly educated and with all that the world has to offer was willing at some point in your life to stop and say, okay, what is the reality here? How am I showing up? And what can I learn? And then how can I help others? Mark, it's beautiful.
Thank you. Yes, it's that's ultimately all of those things really aren't of any value to me when it comes to this, the relationships that I can build with something good. I had all of that and all of the opportunity in front of me in the world and in with power and money and things of that nature. But I found that personally, I felt so empty and so alone, amazingly powerfully alone, that that required something completely different. And so in the end, I still like to work. I've learned how to work healthfully. I still like to do my best. I decided to get a master's at Harvard, not somewhere else, just because I could. Really, it was a privilege, but I'd have done it anywhere. I didn't.
Yeah, no, I get it.
And to me, it's about the human improvement is available to every single person on the planet, regardless of my education, my capability, or anything. It's all available to me in the most simple terms. We've talked about more complex terms in some ways here, but the reality is, okay, start with giving to the other people. Start with that being your first thing. Start with recognizing that I do have resentments. That's human, and that I can search them out and find them, and I need help.
I'm
need
not
other
bad.
Humans. I'm start human. With I'm good as a mm-hmm. human. That's the way I came. Start with all those things. And man, I didn't start with that until somebody pointed it out to me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my wonderful wife had that in her and she shared it with me. And that changed me when I was open to it. Right. And other people in my life were sharing it with me and I had no clue that they were sharing it with me until I recognized, like, I just wanted something better than this in my life. It's wonderful.
So beautiful. Thank you so much. Really grateful you were here. You'll have many choices in your day and in your week. I hope you'll choose to do the work.
If you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, share a written experience, or ask me a question, go to coachchristy.life and fill out the podcast questionnaire, and we'll be in touch with you soon. There are no dumb questions or experiences, just opportunities to learn and do the work. Have a great week.